Marker.
Yes, come on. Are you still there?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here, driving.
Okay, all right. Everything went blank. That's why I wondered if I got cut off.
Okay.
As soon as he comes in, I'll mute.
Ma'am?
I said as soon as he comes on, I'll mute.
Okay.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Please join me in saying the Anabakoas. Anabakoas Gedula Chemin Sa Tatir Serura Aleph Bet Gimel Yutav Tzadi Kabel Rinat Amcha sagbenu tacharenu nora kufre shayin sintet nun na gibor dor shehudcha kevavat shamrem nun gimel dalet yud kaf shin. The letters of the month of Nisan. Are the Dalid that created the planet Mars, the planet Ma'adim, and the Hay that created the constellation Tele, the ram or the lamb. Together, the Dalid and the Hay represents the gematria of nine, which is the energy of creation, the energy of creativity, the energy of Yesod, the energy of the foundation, the support, like the spine supports the body. Barchem tacharem ratame sitkatcha tamid gamlem. Betet resh tzadi taf gimel. Chasin kadosh berov tuvcha nael adatach. Tet kuf bet, tet nun ayin. Yachid geye, lamcha p'nei, zokre kedushata. Yud gimel lamed, pei zayin kuf. Shavatenu kabel, ushma tziakatenu, yodeya talumot, shin kufav. Sadiyut Taf. We have brought the energy of creation into our space, and now we will separate between the right column energy and the left column energy using the 13 attributes of mercy. Adonai Yohe Wahe, Adonai Yohe Wahe, El Rachum V'Chanun, Erech Apayim, V'Rav Chesed V'Emet, Notzer Chesed L'Alafim, Noseawon Wafesha, V'Chata'a V'Nake. We're now going to read the verses that connect to the energy of this year, 5777, the year of the goat. We're going to read two verses. The first that we will read is Lamentations chapter 3, verse 52. Tzaduni katzipor oyevai hinam. When we take the first letters of these words, we're able to parse them into three Hebrew words, tzatz, ki, ach, which translates as appear like brothers. When we take the final letters of the words of the verse, we're able to permute it into two Hebrew words, dir yam, which is translated as sea of tenants. We're now going to say the second verse that connects to the year of the goat. It's Joshua chapter 23, verse 8, because in this year, in this verse, the name of the year, Tafshin Ayin Zion, is concealed. The name, the letters of the name are separated by seven letters each. Ki im ba Adonai Yohe Wahe Elohechem Tadebaku Kasher Asitem Ad Hayom Hazeh. And now for the year 5776, the year of the pause, we also have two verses. The first one is 2 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 34. Rak ha-kohanim ha-yu limat v'lo yachlu lahavshit et kol ha-olot v'yechaschum achechem ha-levim ad kilot hamlacha v'ad yitkachu ha-kohanim Ki ha-levim yishrei levav lehitkadesh me-ha-kohanim. This verse has 25 words. When we take the first letter of each word, we're able to permute it into eight names of God. Adonai Yohe-wahe, la-la-he, wa-wa-wa. Yo la yo ala me, hey hey hey, asa a re ka ha. And the second verse is from Isaiah chapter 26, verse 4. Bichu ba Adonai ad ad ki baya. Yo hey Adonai, yo hey wahe, zur olamim. The next year, 5775, we have three verses that connect to its energy, which is swallowing death forever. The first verse we will study is Job chapter 7, verse 19. Kamalo tishem imeni. Lo tarpeni ad bili ruki. The second verse we will study is 1 Samuel chapter 23, verse 23. Uru udu mikol hamachavoiya Asher yidchabe sham v'shavtem elai el nachon. V'halakti itchem v'chayayim yeshno. V'aretz v'chipasti oto v'kol alfei Yehuda. The third verse connecting to the year of swallowing death forever is Job chapter 20, verse 7. Kegelo lanetzach yoved roav yom ruayom. And the year 5774, peace in the Middle East is the energy. There's one verse that connects to this energy. It's 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 10. Wesamti makom leami Israel untati v'shakam takta v'lo yirgaz od v'lo yosifu v'nei avla la'anoto kasher barishona. We're now going to read a verse from the Zohar that has the energy of certainty. It comes from Parashah Yitro, Pasuk 29. And we'll start with a L'shem Yehud. L'shem Yehud kudsha barichu ishkinte b'chilu Urchimu d'chilu d'chilu urchimu L'yachta l'shem yud hei b'vav hei B'yehuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael Limud Torah mitzvah Lasok Torah mitzvah Vayehino am Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maasei yadeinu konenei aleinu maasei yadeinu konenehu Rabbi Abba amar bekama atar Taneinan dekucha Perichu koma diavid leila witata kolairu kishot viovada dikshot veleid lach mila bialma divae barnash vedashya leya mineya ulanaga veyakalana Tehakulhu ovada Tikshot inun Wikola itzteri Bialma. We'll now scan the 72 names of God. And the 72 names from the Tzaddikim. And the names of the Tzaddikim who left this day, which is the fourth day of Nisan, connecting to the month of Tammuz. Rabbi Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg and Rabbi Yochanan Twersky of Rachmistrivka. And the eighth verse of the Ana B'Koach we say in a whisper. Today's class is Advanced Reincarnation. You can find it on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, row 11, the second column from the left. When that page opens up, scroll down till you find handout number 7G. And this opens up to the soul of a convert, chapter 4, section 5. The soul of a convert. When all three, the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama, were blemished, then they must return in separate incarnations, reincarnations. And the ruach and the neshama will ensconce within the nefesh of a convert. If a person merited his nefesh, his ruach, and his neshama, but then blemished them, the three do not return together. Rather, each one returns in a separate reincarnation. But what are the laws governing rectification of each one? When a nefesh reincarnates into a body for tikkun and becomes rectified, then the ruach is not able to join with it. As we have already mentioned, a blemished ruach can join in an already rectified nefesh. And certainly a blemished ruach cannot join the nefesh before it is rectified, because the ruach can enter only after the nefesh, which is on a lower level as completely rectified. How to escape from this dilemma? How can a blemished ruach reincarnate at all? Before we go into that, I just want to mention what we discussed briefly last week and again briefly this week. The nefesh that comes into the body is a soul of a convert. And along with that comes the soul of a ruach. That combination of a ruach that's not corrected and a nefesh that is corrected, but a soul of the convert, that combination is called a ger, a stranger, or a convert. Once the convert has corrected, or it wouldn't have come into the body at all with the ruach, and then the ruach has corrected itself, the neshama can come with that ruach, and both of those come from the same level. That is called the widow. But it is also possible that the nefesh of the convert and the ruach gets corrected, and now a stranger neshama comes to connect and be corrected as part of all three. That is what would be called an orphan, because the ruach and the neshama are coming from two different root souls. I'm continuing to read. When a nefesh reincarnates into a body for tikkun and becomes rectified, I just read that paragraph before I started to give you the unwritten commentary. So I did read the following. How to escape from this dilemma? How can a blemished ruach reincarnate at all? Thus the ruach must reincarnate alone with the nefesh of a convert, whose nefesh is in place of its own, and there it will become rectified. In the same way, the neshama will come into another body together with the nefesh of a convert. And you have the two types as I describe them. the concept of a nefesh of the convert has already been mentioned, and it will be mentioned further several more times. A special supplementary section is included at the end of section 1, chapter 1, section 11, and note 10 there. We revealed that section in its location in chapter 11. It would be good for you to review the section. We're not going to do that because we've done it a number of times. And this is the secret of what is written in Saba of Mishpatim. The neshamot that encounter the neshamot of converts, and they merit through them a ruach alone or a neshama alone, can only enter a body if there is a nefesh there. Instead of their own nefesh, they take the nefesh of a convert, and through it they achieve rectification. The blemish ruach and neshamot, the plurals of ruach and neshama, encounter the nefesh of the convert, which becomes the vehicle for or interface for their entry into reincarnation. They merit through them because they achieve rectification through the arrangement. And this entire section from the Saba was translated and explained in note 10 to chapter 1. Having said this, we can answer an important question. The majority of people only merit their nefesh, and only a small amount in these later generations, like ours, ever merit to their ruach and to their neshama. Yet we know that the Son of David will not come until all the ruchot and the neshamot are rectified. The question of the rabbi is based on the famous statement of the Talmud, the Son of David will not come until all the neshamot have finished going out from the body. According to Rashi, the body is the name for the storehouse of the souls. The souls must go out from there to enter into physical bodies in this world in order to become rectified. The rabbi now relates this teaching specifically to the soul levels of ruach and neshama. If the ruach and neshama do not come into physical bodies in these later generations, then how can they become rectified? Mashiach, the Son of David, would never be able to come, God forbid. I hope you understand what's being presented here. If the nefesh of a convert didn't exist and couldn't come, then the ruach and the neshama of each individual that had received that in an earlier lifetime, but didn't complete it, and in fact sinned and caused a lowering of its energy. In that case, if there was not a soul of a convert, it could not reincarnate, and it would never be converted, and Mashiach would never come, because the Mashiach can only come when all of the nefeshot and all of the ruchot and all of the nishamot have completed their tikkun. Now we can understand that the ruach and the neshama can reincarnate into other bodies on top of the nefesh of a convert, and they too become rectified. However, when the original nefesh eventually achieves rectification, it can receive in place of his own the ruach of a righteous tzaddik, whose deeds were similar to his, and this will be in place of his own ruach. The original nefesh is the one that could not become the vehicle for its ruach and neshama, because the latter were blemished or damaged in the first incarnation. When this nefesh becomes rectified in subsequent incarnations, what happens to it? Its ruach and neshama have gone to the nefesh of a convert. Therefore, in place of his own ruach, he will receive the ruach of a tzaddik. Similarly, he can achieve the neshama of a righteous tzaddik. If his nefesh leaves this world before the original ruach has finished its tikkun, then the nefesh can, in the meantime, accompany the ruach and the righteous tzaddik to the world that is coming, and through it receive its fitting reward. Once for its own ruach completes the tikkun through its own incarnation in another body, as explained above, then the nefesh will say, I will return to my first husband, and it will reunite with its ruach. Likewise, once the neshama becomes rectified, his nefesh and ruach will return to become one with it. This is the end of the section. Are there any questions? Section 6, the righteous and the wicked. We will now explain the difference between a righteous person and an evil person. This will allow us to better understand the differences among the verses and the things discussed by our sages. Sometimes we see that a person only reincarnates three times, according to the esoteric meaning of the verse, Behold, Hashem does all these things two or three times with a man. There are also the esoteric meanings of the verses, For three sins of Israel, but for the fourth I will not return. And the third pasuk, Who visits the sins of the fathers on the children, unto the third generation, and unto the fourth generation? Yet it says in the Sefer HaTikkunim that a righteous person reincarnates up to 1,000 generations. And there are other sources similar to these spread throughout the Tanakh. Thus, the question is whether a soul reincarnates up to three times and no more, or whether it can reincarnate as many as 1,000 times, and maybe even more. The verse itself answers the question. The fourth generation refers to evil people. As it says, Who visits the sins of the fathers to those who hate me? In contrast, to whom is he doing kindness for 1,000 generations? The same verse answers, To those who love me and keep my mitzvot. Those who hate God are the evil people to whom the four-generation limit on reincarnation applies. Those who love God are the righteous people to whom 1,000 generations of reincarnation applies. This explanation is as follows. When the nefesh of a person comes into the world for the first time and then sins, becoming blemished and forcing it to reincarnate into another body to become rectified, this is the first reincarnation. If it doesn't become rectified, then it returns in a second reincarnation. If it is not rectified, then it returns in a third reincarnation. But from then onward, he will not be able to attain rectification by reincarnating again. It is then said about it that this nefesh will be cut off from its people completely. This verse in Genesis is the first of many times in the Torah that the penalty of excision of the souls of the wicked is stipulated. However, this is only when a person failed to accomplish any rectification over the course of the first three Gilgulim. On the other hand, if at some point during those three reincarnations he began the process of tikkun, even a little, then he will not be cut off. It is even possible that he could return to achieve rectification over the course of 1,000 generations, if necessary. In effect, the difference between the righteous and the wicked has been explained. The completely wicked will not be allowed to reincarnate more than 3 times. The righteous may reincarnate as many as 1,000 times in order to increase merit and rectification. Hence, one who does not achieve any rectification at all is called evil, but one who rectifies even a little is called righteous. All the subsequent Gilgulim will complete the rectification process. To what are these words applicable? I believe that I heard from my teacher that all this is only true regarding the nefesh, since it is from the world of Asiyah, which is immersed in the Klipot. That is exactly why, excision, the Hebrew word is karet, cutting off, is only mentioned with respect to the nefesh, because only it can be cut off from holiness and remain immersed in the Klipot. The vessel that talks about excision or karet always talks about the nefesh being cut off, God forbid. The ruach and neshama are never mentioned in connection with karet, excision. However, the klipot do not have such a strong hold over the ruach and the neshama, which are from Yetzirah and Beriah. Therefore, a person is able to rectify them without failure, although there are those that accomplish tikkun quickly, and there are those who do it over a longer period of time and after many reincarnations. How is excision, how is karet possible? How is such a thing possible? We have already discussed the verse where it is written that God devises strategies in order that the banished one should not be banished, that no nefesh should descend into the klipot and be cut off there, never to be redeemed. However, this matter can be understood in the following way. The good that was accumulated during the three incarnations is dispersed among others. The evil that is now left isolated and alone is dissipated and destroyed. My commentary. Please realize how vocabulary changes. Evil is defined for a desire to receive for oneself alone in some uses. And in this article, it is defined as someone who does not make any rectification in three reincarnations. It is really the same thing, since someone deep into the desire to receive for oneself alone cannot affect the rectification of any errors. What is meant by the good is dispersed among others? Does this mean that a mitzvah that someone does will be allocated to someone else? Where is the removal of bread of shame? Ultimately, we teach that every good thing someone does creates an effect of pleasure to the body part that produces that mitzvah, and every soul part as well. This is the reason for the resurrection, since the body follows the direction of the soul and does something good in effect to affect its pleasure. Mida keneged mida. Measure for measure. Yet there is this idea of the mitzvah is allocated to other bodies in order to eliminate the evil in the rest of the body. This is very rare and will be explained later in the book in more detail. Many chances for the righteous is the next section, section 7. Does anybody have any questions on section 6? A righteous person may reincarnate many times to cleanse his sins while he is increasing his reward, but a wicked person will be sent straight to hell, to Gehinnom, to burn out his sins. There is another difference between a righteous and an evil person that will be elucidated now, and in doing so, we will be able to understand what the sages wrote regarding Elisha, who was called Acher, meaning other. Elisha ben Abuya was one of the four rabbis who entered the orchard, or the Pardes. Pardes is spelled Pei Resh Dalet Samach. The initial letters of Peshat, Remes, Drash, and Sod. The four levels of which Torah can be learned. They are respectively the simple meaning, the Peshat. Sometimes it's translated as the unclothed meaning. Two is the intimated meaning, which is the remes, the hints. Three, the expounded meaning, which is the drash. And the four, the secret coded meanings, which is the most mysterious level that can be known by mankind. Rabbi Akiva was one of these four rabbis who entered the realm of Kabbalah on a mission to bring spiritual rectification to the world during the horrible time of the Roman occupation and oppression. Elisha also entered the Pardes at that time. Although he was a great Torah scholar, he had not been properly prepared for what he was to witness in the other upper realms. And as a result, he became a heretic until his dying day. For this reason, he was called Acher, meaning the other one. The sages in the Talmud Hagiga made the following statement concerning Elisha. This statement coincides with a broader general rule that will be considered in immediately afterwards. He, Elisha, cannot be judged because of his involvement with Torah. If a righteous person learned Torah, especially If he is one of those from the early generations, then he is not sentenced to Gehinnom. Gehinnom is the Jewish equivalent of hell, or some say purgatory. A person may be sentenced to that place after death in order to purify him from the sins that he committed during this lifetime. Although it is usually a temporary punishment that does not last more than one earth year, the subjective experience may well seem interminable. The Arizal will explain in chapter 9, based upon the Talmud of the section of Hagiga, that the fires of Gehinnom cannot affect someone who has learned Torah. Thus, in spite of the terrible sin of Acher, he could not end up in Gehinnom because of his many years of Torah learning and scholarship. Nevertheless, he, as well as many other tzaddikim who may come under the control of this rule, needs to be cleansed of their sins. He must be cleansed of his sins to the extent that he will be able to enter paradise. Therefore, there is no other tikkun for him except reincarnation. For each and every sin for which he did not atone through suffering during his lifetime, and for which he cannot receive punishment in Gehinnom, he will have to reincarnate. He will reincarnate as many times as is necessary in order to rectify each and every one of his mistakes. The original text is obscure here, according to this rabbi making the commentary. The translation is according to the generally accepted meaning. Therefore, he will reincarnate through many Gilgulim in order to atone and rectify his sins. This is not the case for an evil person who can go to Gehinnom to be cleansed there of all his sins. He will not need to come back to reincarnate. Upon this teaching, the disciple and author, Rav Chaim Vital, may his memory be a blessing, asks a question. Now there is room for a question. Would it not be preferable to go to Gehinnom to immediately clear all of one's sins instead of returning through many reincarnations? Humbly, I, Chaim, will answer this question. The Holy One, blessed is He, is omniscient and knows that if an evil person reincarnates, he will willfully only add to his sins and the abundance of his transgressions. They will outweigh his merits. Since it is known that he has already completed the few mitzvot that are absolutely vital to the root of his nefesh, it is better for him to be removed from the world. And so God removes him from the world and lowers him into Gehinnom to cleanse his sins, while the merit of his mitzvot remains intact. God desires chesed, kindnesses. However, with respect to a righteous person whose sins are less than his mitzvot, the suffering during Gilgulim can cleanse him and cleanse them, these sins. The rabbi is alluding to an important rule concerning reward and punishment. The Talmud defines a wicked person as one whose sins outweigh the merits of his good deeds. On the other hand, a righteous person is one whose mitzvot outweigh his guilt. Hence, it seems the rule is being applied to determine whether his gilgulim, his reincarnation, shall continue or not. If he is deemed righteous because of his mitzvot, outweigh his sins, then his reincarnation will continue. His many merits will remain intact, even while he is increasing them with each reincarnation. His reward will be tremendous, without limit. This is along the lines of what the sages have said. The Holy One, blessed be He, wanted to merit Israel. Therefore, he gave them much Torah and mitzvot. The sin of the acher, this is my written commentary. The sin of the acher is usually not mentioned, except there was a sin that occurred after he returned from the garden. One of my teachers explained that the sin was to see two thrones in heaven, one for the Shekhinah and one for the Satan. And this is what he taught to his students. His most famous student, who never gave up trying to bring his teacher back to the concept of one God, was Meyer, the husband of Bruria. Bruria was a woman who wore tefillin and was a sage in her own right. She is quoted in a few places in the Talmud. The vision of the acher saw in the pardes is the idea of the war between good and evil, as opposed to the unification that is taught in Judaism, but only explained in the Kabbalah. The purpose of evil is to test human beings. This is to bring greater pleasure to the human being. And please realize this teaching takes a significant amount of effort to study and to truly internalize. And do not make the mistake that you understand it from what I have written here. The Zohar also says that a man who studies Torah may not go to Gehinnom except for a moment, so that he can elevate those who are ready to leave with him. They will go to the Garden of Eden, and he will return to the earth plane to grow some more spiritually. When you reread this section, please take note of the difference in language that is used when talking about a person whose merit outweighs his sins versus a person who needs to be cleansed of his sins. There are many stories of tzaddikim who went to their individual judgment day or viewed the judgment day of someone who had carriages filled with black and white angels, and each one would stand on the scale of justice. The metaphor is not complete, and it is important for you to tear out by its roots. The Christian influence of your knowledge of the word sin in English and the five words that are translated as sin in Hebrew. The words are chet, Pesha, and Avera. And there are others that I do not yet understand. The story of Rav Sheshet, section 4, chapter 4, section 8. The statement of Rav Sheshet mentioned above in section 4 is clarified by explaining who his previous Gilgul was, and thereby the concept of double Gilgul will be illustrated. Earlier we spoke of the Gilgul of Rav Sheshet when discussing the concept of double Gilgul. The Talmud says that Rav Sheshet was blind. When he studied Torah, he was joyous and he would say, "Rejoice, my nefesh, rejoice, my nefesh, for you have I read, for you have I learned." The concept of double Gilgul was introduced in section 4 of chapter 4, where the statement of Rav Sheshet was also mentioned briefly. In order to understand the Ari's explanations of Rav Sheshet, it is necessary to examine the original argument in the Talmud. In the Talmud, Rav Elazar challenges Rav Sheshet's statement according to its first understanding. Do we study Torah just for ourselves, as seems to be implied by Rav Sheshet? Or do we study Torah, Rav Elazar asks, because it is a mitzvah and a form of worshiping the divine? As it is written, if it were not for my covenant, the Torah, day and night, then I would not have put the laws of heaven and earth in place. The Talmud answers that at first a person who has in mind that he is learning in order to improve himself, and then afterwards he comes to study for cosmic and altruistic reasons, like the contention of Rav Elazar. My commentary. The above commentary will be one of the most important paragraphs for you to manifest as the Torah of your life. Reread the paragraph above, please. Now, only the answer, but the question as well, is difficult for the Arizal, which will now explore the case of Rav Sheshet in greater detail. This will serve as a further illustration of double Gilgul. It seems hard to understand when they say that he was benefiting himself and not others. It is easier to understand when we contemplate the verse. If you have become wise, you have become wise for yourself. In addition, why did he specifically say, my nefesh? And why is all of this recorded regarding Rav Sheshet and no one else? Consequently, the statement of Rav Sheshet, rejoice my nefesh, still needs to be clarified. The rabbi will not present a new insight into Rav Sheshet's statement. He will now present a new insight. To answer these questions, we require an introduction regarding his Gilgul. Baba Ben Buta the Pious was a student of the elder Shammai. All of his life, he daily brought a doubtful transgression offering. A doubtful transgression offering in Hebrew, Sham Safek, is the name of a sacrifice that a person might offer in the Holy Temple in Jerusalem. It is offered when a person is not sure whether he sinned or not. And is explained in the Talmud. Baba Ben Buta, as a consequence of his great piety, assumed that he was always in need of such atonement. He brought the offering continuously every day, although he probably never sinned in any significant way. The main point here is to show that Baba Ben Buta was an extremely pious person. It was Baba Ben Buta who returned as the reincarnation of Rav Sheshet in order to complete some tikkun that was required of him. Since King Herod had taken out his eyes, of Baba Ben Bhutta. Therefore, he, Rav Sheshe, was also blind, as is known. The story of King Herod blinding the eyes of Baba Ben Bhutta is related in the Talmud, in the Baba Batri section. The rabbi is mentioning it here in order to indicate that Rav Sheshe, who was also blind, is the reincarnation of Baba Ben Bhutta. In the form of gematria called Atbash, the letters that spell Baba change into the letters that spell Sheshet. The gematria called Atbash is a method of permutation of letters. It is derived by writing the first 11 letters of the Hebrew alphabet in a column in a descending order. The next 11 letters are written in a column next to the first column, but in ascending order. And this is discussed in our Gematria section on the Yeshem website. Now we can arrive at the explanation. A person who does not complete his tikkun in his first gilgul, even if only by a small amount, must come back to complete it a second gilgul. When he completed his nefesh in the first gilgul, except for a small amount, and he reincarnates a second time, then all the reward of the Torah and mitzvot performed during the second gilgul are for the sake of the nefesh that came to complete its tikkun. At the time of the resurrection, the nefesh will return to the first body, within which the majority of Torah and mitzvot that were required of him were performed. It is only come into the second body in a borrowed way. In other words, the nefesh that was nearly complete in its first gilgul was borrowing the body of the second gilgul to complete the finishing touches of its tikkun. Rav Sheshet knew that his nefesh was first in the body of Baba Ben Bhutta, a man of great learning and well known for his piety. He only reincarnated a second time to rectify a small amount that had been left incomplete. This made his body sad, because it meant that all of his efforts were for the sake of that nefesh, which in the end would return to the first body in the time of the resurrection. All the benefit of the Torah that he studied and the mitzvot that he performed were for that nefesh and not his body. It was the nefesh that had to rejoice and not the body. Thus he, Rav Sheshet, would say, "Rejoice, my nefesh, and not me. For you I read, for you I studied. It was for your benefit and not my own." At this point, the rabbi has explained the statement of Rav Sheshet, and he has illustrated the double gilgul. Let us review. Double gilgul occurs when the entire nefesh is nearly completed in the first gilgul, in order to achieve the finishing touches that it needs. This nefesh reincarnates into a second body. In that body, there is a spark of a nefesh to whom that particular gilgul rightly belongs. However, the reward and merit of the Torah that is studied and the mitzvot that are done in that gilgul will go to the nefesh that previously inhabited another body. In the time of the resurrection, that nefesh will arise with the body of the first gilgul, where the majority of its Torah and mitzvot were done, and it will also take for itself all the merit that was earned in the second gilgul. The spark of the nefesh that was the true identity of that second gilgul will be left seemingly with nothing. For this reason, Rav Sheshet was sad. He knew that the merit of his learning was going to the nefesh of someone else, and it will arise in the time of the resurrection with Baba Ben Buta and not with Sheshet. Therefore, it was the nefesh that had to rejoice and not the body. And he would say, "Rejoice, my nefesh, and not I. For you I read, for you I studied. It was for your benefit and not my own." Rav Elazar demurs, "Why should Rav Sheshet be sad? Do we not study Torah for altruistic reasons and not merely to benefit ourselves? Accordingly, it is appropriate that the merit should go to someone else. Why is Rav Sheshet sad?" And the Talmud answers that in the first place, a person also wants to benefit himself as well. The Talmud answers that in the first place, a person also wants to benefit himself as well as others with his hard work and effort. My commentary: this does not fully satisfy me. The second body will also resurrect with the nefesh from the other soul, the other nefesh. Why then is the body of Rabbi Sheshet sad? And as a separate discussion, does a ruach have the capability of becoming a double ruach? Does a neshama have the capability of becoming a double neshama? Those questions remain unanswered. We have gone past our time a few minutes. Does anyone have any questions? Our next class at 7 p.m. West Coast time will be a Zohar class in the Parashah of Vayikra. So please come and join us. And then tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock, we will connect to the month of Tammuz. Shalom to all.
Thank you.
Thank you. You have a beautiful evening.
You too.